Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends.
I'm someone who got a master's degree in failing, but a PhD in getting right back up again. A-plus students end up working for C students because they didn't really have to rely on anything else, or they didn't have to figure it out and be resourceful.
If you can learn to do a bunch of things that not a lot of people can do, then you will never have to worry about a paycheck.
Do you know what most people can't do? And if someone can master this little skill, they will take themselves and they will 1,000x whatever they're trying to do.
What's that?
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Today, we are releasing my conversation with Jen Cohen. Jen is a best-selling author of the new book, Bigger, Better, Bolder. She is a TV personality, a fitness influencer, enthusiast. She's worked with a lot of the top celebrities in the world as their trainer, based out in Los Angeles. And she really got into the space just by being in the fitness world, but then carved out a niche for herself in a much bigger way, past just being in fitness. So this was a conversation that I was not expecting when we first jumped into it. She actually turned the mic around to me and started asking me questions at the very beginning of our chat. But we did end up going back to her, and then you'll forgive the length of this episode, okay? Because what ended up happening was I did this long trip. I was gone for probably 5 days. And I went to 4 different cities in 5 days, and every single one that I went to was raining. Vegas, LA, Nashville, and San Jose, all areas that normally don't rain a lot, it was raining everywhere we went. So in Los Angeles, when it rains, it's like, you know, there may as well be 3 feet of snow on the ground. People just freak out. So there was a ton of traffic, and so the studio that we had in Hollywood was a little bit further away from Jen than she realized. And then the traffic from the rain made it to where we could only have like a 35, 40 minute conversation. And we typically go for over an hour. So she's already pre-agreed to come on the show again next time she's in Vegas so we can make it happen then. But I still think that we had such a fun conversation. It was, again, super easy to talk to. And if you're not following Jen on social media, you are doing yourself a disservice. So go follow her on all the social platforms that you can. She also has her own podcast that you can go check out. So this was a lot of fun. And I'm really grateful to Jen for taking the time to make this one happen. So enjoy this conversation with the one, the only Jen Cohen. Jen, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And it's nice to be your friend. Travis makes friends.
Well, you know, not many people get to claim that honor. So
I feel honored.
You know, well, you should. You should.
I was just telling you before the show, I love this name. It's like such a happy, name.
Yeah. It, you know what? It's an activity that I feel like as adults, it's just not... It's not like something that you do anymore.
No, it's hard.
Like make friends, you know? But also we're in like a friendship and relationship, you know, a loneliness epidemic. We're in a friendship shortage.
By the way, the loneliness epidemic is probably one of the biggest epidemics we're having right now. It's not getting any better.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's actually, there was an actual warning put out by the U.S. Surgeon General like 5-6 months ago about like warning people against loneliness, because it has actual physical health detrimental health side effects, like worse than smoking cigarettes.
Loneliness
is worse than smoking cigarettes. Yeah.
What exactly? I mean, I've read all of those studies myself.
Yeah.
Besides, of course, you know, people die of isolation and loneliness, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's when you see like when people who were married for 50 years and one of the people die, then they end up dying afterwards by a couple months because of the loneliness. But what the sad thing is, we're not even getting to that point anymore because nobody's even going out long enough to make it. Like, forget about 50 years, like, you know, 50
five
minutes.
Years. Exactly. Yeah,
not
exactly.
5 years is even a big deal. Like, we're just in a place where we're more concerned about having these pseudo fake friendships online And our dopamine gets hit by just watching a like or a comment versus like an actual conversation in real time.
Like a meaningful connection with somebody rather than...
We're losing the ability to even know how to socialize.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Or even what it means to like have close friends or whatever. That's exactly the reason when we wanted to do the rebrand, it was like, I want to still maintain the idea that this is about building relationships with people, because that's ultimately what the show was about. It was just before, it was more in a professional setting. And I never liked the word networking. It just kind of it's when you say the word, everybody knows what you're talking about. So it has that advantage, but its disadvantage is that it comes with all these like, you know, just gross feelings that people don't really like, you know?
It just feels skeevy. Like there's it feels very opportunistic and manipulative in a way.
Covertly.
It doesn't seem authentic. How about that? Yeah. Right? I agree. Yeah. I agree. But it gets hard. Like the truth of the matter is if you need to like create relationships and friendships for not just your personal well-being, right? Mm-hmm. What we just talked about, but for business as well. Like what are you supposed to do, right? Like networking is like a vital piece of that.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. And yet there's such a negative connotation with it at the same time.
I think it was like this big movement in like, you know, the 80s and 90s where networking just kind of got hijacked into go to the local chamber meetings, put on the name tag and, you know, nurse the cocktail all night and barf out your elevator pitch. And then all of a sudden you have corporate training on elevator pitches and you have corporate training on business cards and you have training on how to succeed at the networking event or whatever. And it's just like what happened was I started talking to these people and learning about networking when I started my show, because I had no idea how to do it. That was kind of the reason I was starting it. I grew up kind of in a cultish environment. And so when I left that, it was just like, I'm starting from scratch. I have no idea how to talk to people. I have no idea how to go meet people.
A cultish environment?
I should start a show about this. Yeah. Yeah. So I call it a cultish environment because I can't bring myself just to call it a cult, like straight up. But dictionary definition is a cult. I grew up, went to the same campus is where I graduated kindergarten and college. So like kindergarten all the way through senior year of college was all on one condensed like 40-acre compound campus, which is also where I went to church. So all my school, church, friends, parent, like teachers, authority, everything was all in like this one place until I left at like age 21, age 22. So like when I was starting the show and everything, it was just like, I figured out that I didn't want to be in ministry because I got my degree in Bible and church ministries, double major. And when I left, I was just like, I want to go into business, but I've never met a millionaire, let alone like had a personal relationship or friendship with one. You know, I was always taught that money's not a good thing, you know, unless you're giving it to the church. So when I started the show, it was like, I got to figure out how to do this networking thing, and I have no idea how to do it. And it seems like all the ways that are like traditional wisdom about doing it are just not working. Right. Because none of the people that I wanted to meet were at the events that I was going to.
What kind of cult was it?
It was called Independent Fundamental Baptist. So there's actually a documentary that just came out on HBO Max called Let Us Pray, like P-R-E-Y, Let Us Pray. That's like a kind of a study about the IFB.
That you were involved with. Is your parents, I mean, this is now going to turn for a second, I'm sorry, yeah, but like, this is fascinating. Yeah. Are your parents still involved in the cult?
No, they're not at all in that sense. Like they still believe a lot of the same things. And really like, it's like, the reason I hesitate calling it a cult, because I have a friend who, I've had on a show, he's a good friend of mine, and he grew up in this like Mormon polygamist cult in Southern Utah with 44 brothers and sisters and three moms. And so like, when I look at that, I'm like, that's a cult. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what was interesting is I was talking to him about that and I was telling him that I couldn't call what I grew up in a cult because of what he grew up in. And then he told me, he was like, I can't call what I grew up in a cult either. And I was like, oh, maybe that's interesting. Maybe that's just something that people who have been through that experience don't want to admit that happened to them or something.
Or it's repressed. I don't know. Yeah. It's like kind of they don't want to think about it that way.
Sure.
That is fascinating. Is it like Scientology in a way? Or
It has similar aspects. It's not quite as new age as Scientology would be. You know, like they have roots back for like a long time, but. Yeah, the IFB was like a really big in the you know, 70s, 60s, 70s, and that it just kind of like kept, you know, going forward, unfortunately. I think within the next generation or two, it'll pretty much be dead. It's pretty small, you know, like maybe 6-7 million people or something in the country, which if you take that as like a broad, like, you know, piece mm-hmm. of Christianity as a whole, it's like, you know, there's 2 billion plus Christians on the planet. So 10 million, less than 10 million in one like specified part of it. It's just like, we were just so, you know, adamant about who we could spend time with, who we couldn't spend time with, you know, things like that. We wouldn't associate with Southern Baptists because they were too liberal for us. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So we were fundamentalist.
Yeah.
Fundamentalist Christian, you know.
So how old are you now?
I'm 31.
So how did you get out?
Oh, man. It was a
sorry,
long...
I don't mean to like ask all these questions.
Turn the tables? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was a long, process. It started when I was like graduating college. With my degree in Bible and church ministries. And then it was basically like 5 to 7 years after that, a lot of deconstructing, a lot of questions that weren't being answered, a lot of I was being, you know, ostracized by the people I grew up with, a lot of, you know, just what I call them cracks in the dam. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you get out into the real world, you start experiencing things, you start meeting people that didn't grow up that way.
Right.
And there's just like a little crack. Forms and you're like, oh, that's weird. You know, that's inconsistent with what I was taught or what I believe, right. But I'm experiencing it even though I don't believe it to be true, but I don't know how to reconcile these two things. And so it just kind of like more cracks kept coming out until the whole dam broke, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, it was really weird actually. I was talking to somebody the other day. I was like, it's been like 6 years since I've been to a church, which is wild to me because when I grew up, it was like Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, every single week. We had chapel as a part of school, which is basically just school church.
Yeah.
We had soul winning on Saturdays, which is just go to church and have a little sermon and then go out and knock doors and invite people to come to church. So it was just like almost every day of my life for like 20 years was lived there at that one campus, like
wow.
at church. So it's weird for me now to be like, oh yeah, I haven't been in church in like years.
Wow.
I don't know what to do with myself about that. You
exactly.
Know? I don't and know do what to do with my Sundays.
What are your parents, like your family married now or what do you have?
Yep. So my wife grew up the same way I did. We started dating at 16 and we got married right after college. So we came through all of that experience together. So that also was a super weird, unique experience
wow.
to like. I was further ahead in yeah. terms of, and not in terms of like being right or whatever, just I was going down this path and almost nobody else in my life was going down that path. And they also didn't know that I was going down that path. So I would just show up and like, but I was having all these thoughts and I didn't know how to reconcile. I didn't know how to talk to anybody about it. Cause like in that world, you know, it's weird is like the people who claim to have the truth the most often are most afraid of questions. And that to me is a huge red flag for anybody that's proclaiming to have the truth mm-hmm. because the truth doesn't back down from questions. It holds up in the light of questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I didn't know how to talk to people about it because if you brought up any questions, it was immediately like shut down. It wasn't encouraged
yeah, of course.
To ask questions. So yeah, it was a very, very lonely time period for sure. Trying to
wow.
figure all that stuff
that
out.
Is. Fascinating.
But yeah, that's the whole background on why I started the show, why it came to Travis Makes Friends, and you know how we got here today. Because that was like the big reason. It was just like I'm starting from scratch. Because when I left that world, it's just they kind of hey, good luck, you know,
right?
Like,
it's like you're
nobody
on your
follows
own.
You. It's like my entire childhood, my entire life was there, and then all of a sudden it was gone. You know, all the relationships that I had then, and I had no idea what I was doing when I came out and, you know, into the real world, so to speak.
Right.
So I was building all those skills from scratch.
And did you have like money? How did you make your first month? Like, what was your first job?
Door-to-door sales, 100% commission, door-to-door sales for like 5-6 years, right out of college was what I did. So yeah, just did door-to-door sales, save some money and try to figure out what I was going to do with my life when
wow.
I was like 23 and had a wife and mortgage and bills to pay and all that. I couldn't go, you know, crash on my buddy's couch. It's like, well, I have responsibility,
right.
you know,
right.
I bought my first house and got married in the same year, which is the same year I graduated college. And it's like, well, you know, I got bills, I got loans, I got stuff to do, you know? So
wow.
100% commission door-to-door sales. And then started just
what were you selling?
Some stuff on the side. Started in solar. And then
this
sold.
Is called Jennifer Makes Friends, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, solar alarms and then water purification. And then somewhere in between there, I was selling roofing, I was selling siding.
So you must be a good salesperson because you had to rely on your commission.
Yeah, yeah. 100% commission is, I mean, part of that's why I love your book and your brand so much with the whole concept of being bold, and going for what you want and asking for what you want, because you know it's direct correlation, and if you never ask, the answer is always no type of a thing. And I learned that very quickly in 100% commission door-to-door sales.
You know, exactly.
You just move to the next door.
What would you say your big takeaway is, like, what makes someone a good salesman? What's the one thing that, like, how would you do it? Because that's like something where, like, you're either fast or feast, right?
Because yeah, I mean, yeah, right, exactly.
You're basically, you kill what you eat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because is that right?
yeah, eat what you kill.
Eat what you kill.
Yep.
We're getting them. They're not coming out as fluid as they should.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't take no for an answer.
Yeah. What I tell people in selling in business and entrepreneurship, it basically requires two things: teachability and rejectability, which is basically what I define as like the ability to handle rejection without losing the optimism for the next opportunity.
Mm.
You know, you have to maintain some level of optimism for the next opportunity around the corner. Like, right. You're not going to go knock on the next door. You're not going to take the next sales call. You're not going to sit in the next meeting or
right.
Go to the next networking event or like whatever it is. So like, you got to be teachable, because you know I had some people that I would train, so mm-hmm. I got pretty good at it, and obviously started managing people, recruiting people, training people, and that was the worst thing, was to sit with somebody who I knew had potential, who I thought like this person can communicate really well, they're really good with people, but then they get out on doors and they're just not teachable. Like they'll come back to me and tell me they lost the sale, and so we start working through it. And we get down to like the crux of like where they're losing them in the conversation. And I'll say something and they'll be like, oh, well, but it wasn't because of that. It was because of blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, look, man, you can either make excuses or you can get results. And you obviously want to be the person that produces the excuses. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So let's not go down this path any further.
Have you heard of, okay, you know, do you know who, have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know who Jordan Belfort is?
Yeah.
Okay. So he was on my podcast a few days ago.
Okay.
And it was hilarious and fascinating because he has his whole sales technique or tactic is called the straight line.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this whole
thing? I read his book. Yeah,
you read the book
a few years back.
He has like a few books, but this straight line was what's his technique or tactic in the movie Wolf of Wall Street, and like what he sells and when he does all these like seminars, right?
Yep.
And he like grabbed something. He grabbed a Slate milk, which is like it's a protein drink that I had on my counter. And he's like, sell me this. Like, how would you sell me? How would you sell me this? And he did this like 30-minute like sales training on like what would make someone buy this. He's like, well, why would someone buy this? And I'm like, well, there's 20 grams of protein. There's 0 grams of sugar. It's low in calories. It's satiating. It tastes really good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no, well, those are all the benefits of it. But what would make me want to believe you? Are you an expert? Do you mm-hmm. come across like an expert? And he like grilled me. And it was so interesting because there's some people who are innately so good and understanding how to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other people who are just lousy at it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And what was interesting, why I'm even telling you this, is that he told me like the same thing, like people who worked for him, been back at the Wolf of on Wall Street.
Yeah, his firm, yeah.
Like they would come with like a million excuses of why someone's not turning, like how they can't sell them.
Yep.
But really, it only came down to like the same 5 or 6 excuses,
mm-hmm.
but like different, you know, different like variables of it.
Yep.
And then with this training situation, like he got like 80% of them to like turn and to mm-hmm. sell, while like some of them just couldn't do it. So I'm just fascinated by that, because to me, if you're a really good salesperson, you're really good at psychology.
Mm.
You really understand human nature. You can pick up on like social emotional cues. You can pick up on body language. Like you have to figure these things out really quickly.
Yes.
And also be confident enough not to take rejection or the awkwardness like personally, right?
Yeah,
and not feel that way and make the other person feel that way. Like I'm a big believer, if someone's a good salesperson, like, I think that's the most important person you can have at a company. Hmm. And it says so much more than just the fact that they're good at sales. Like, they're usually like very, very high on the EQ as well.
Right. The bottom line is somebody has to be good at sales. If you're the founder, you know, it was funny. I was sitting down with Guy Kawasaki, I was telling you, and he said, I'm a firm believer that there's two people in this world. There's people who make shit and people who sell shit. Mm-hmm. He said, everything else is bullshit. And I was like, I like that, you know, because it's the Wozniak and Jobs thing. It's like, if you're the founder who makes shit and you don't like selling, or you're part of that 20% that can't flip and figure out how to sell something, you will not be successful if you do not have somebody who can come in and sell, whether that's hiring somebody and paying them good money to sell it, or that's like partnering with somebody that's a co-founder that can sell the dream, sell the vision, sell the idea. Like, that is a part of the equation regardless.
So it's also like selling a lifestyle, a feeling. You're basically, if you can sell an emotion, to me, that is like a true salesman.
A master.
Right, a master salesman.
Yeah.
And like, to your point, if you're not able to, like, no company will ever do well if they don't have like a star salesperson. You can't make a living. And then that's, to me, that's why it's the most important function of a company. That's a good example. You know, you talk about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Isn't that the book? I mean, that's the...
No, so that's...
No, Guy... No, wait. Guy...
So Guy was Apple. Robert Kiyosaki is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Guy Kawasaki was first Apple, one of the first Apple employees. He was the chief evangelist at Apple, chief evangelist at Canva now.
Oh, is that the guy that you were talking to? Mm-hmm, okay, I thought you were talking to the other guy. I was going to give you a whole other story.
Oh, really?
I was going to say, he wrote a book about Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and he talks about like A students working for C students.
Right.
Oh, so you interviewed Guy. And what did he do?
So he was chief evangelist at Apple and was hired at Apple like 1980s. He was one of the first like sales and marketing people in the Macintosh division of Apple. And then had a very illustrious career in Silicon Valley, obviously, afterwards.
Right. Oh my God, this whole time.
He was on like the Think Different campaign, you know.
Totally.
Like, those hugely successful Apple campaigns before Apple was Apple. He was, you know, direct report with Steve Jobs and stuff, and spent a lot of time with him. And then, taught lots of consulting and was chief something at Mercedes for a while, Mercedes-Benz. And then now he's chief evangelist at Canva, which is a, whatever, $30 billion.
Yeah, it's another big one.
Or something. Yeah.
It's also not a small little company.
Right. Yeah exactly. Exactly. Multiple New York Times bestselling author and stuff. They both get that a lot though. Robert Kiyosaki, Guy Kawasaki, it sounds exactly the same.
Exactly like, the same.
Rob, like just a little bit of a vocal intonation and you're talking 100%. About a different guy.
Oh, no, what? Okay, so I'm not the only one.
But they're both extremely impressive, so.
Both of them are extremely impressive. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Jen, I love the questions, but I would rather turn this around to you.
Yeah, listen. I'm just making friends here.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, that's fair. And it brings up one of the main ideas that you promote the most, which is the boldness, is what we were talking about. And the more that I do conversations like this will be episode, I don't know, 915 or something of the show. And the more I do those conversations, the more I start to realize that every single person that I've encountered who's done amazing things in this world has that as a common denominator. It's the ability to handle rejection and keep moving to the next thing, keep moving to the next thing. But boldness is what starts that, because you don't get to anything without having the boldness that's required to start the ask. And I know that you talk about how this is not something that's born, it's more something that's bred. So how do we start instilling more boldness in our daily routines and our daily lives?
Yes. So, well, thank you. So first of all, I think that like the people are always this whole thing happened was people always say, what do you think is the reason why you're successful? Or what was the reason why you think that person's successful? Success is a very big word, right? And it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But in my opinion, there's the one through line is, no matter what you're successful in, I believe that you have to be bold enough to actually create the life that you want and curate it. And to me, people tend to think that they're either born bold or they're not. And when they think that they're not, then they end up acquiescing to what's in front of them and taking what's good enough. And I believe that boldness is a skill, like anything else you want to get good at. If you want to learn Spanish, if you want to learn you know, dancing, whatever it is, you have to practice it. And it's no different with being bold. You have to practice the skill. And like any other muscle, the more you don't use it or the less you use it, it atrophies.
Yeah.
The more you use it, it grows. It gets stronger. It's like working out. I use analogies like working out all the time. You want to go to the gym and get strong. You don't go one time and then think you're going to be fit forever, right? Mm-hmm. You have to keep on going. You got to be consistent about it. And so boldness to me is something that is forever. Boldness is forever. And you can do these small little bold moves to create, to kind of increase your boldness.
From a parenting perspective, I don't know if you ever get this question or not, but like, how do you instill a sense? What I've noticed as a parent was that what I've observed is that I feel like we're almost all born with boldness to a certain extent, because like kids are the epitome of bold. Mm-hmm. Like they will always ask for what they want. Sometimes repeatedly, sometimes annoyingly, they will just continuously ask for what they want. But then culture tells them that that's bad and that's impolite and that's not nice and don't do that and that's annoying and stop asking and all this stuff. And then it almost like makes a certain percentage of people just shrink into themselves, and then a certain percentage of people just, I don't know, don't give a shit or something and continue to be bold in their life or whatever the case is. But what my question is, like, as a parent now, is like, I always am looking at that to be like, I want to make sure that my kids understand that there are just like, there's some things that are just like societally acceptable things to do. Like you shouldn't be this way in most social settings, because that is going to like just put out this complete idea or air of just complete lack of self-awareness, and people just don't want to be around you, and that's bad. But also, I do not want to you know, completely discourage the acts of boldness that I see in them, especially with my daughter. I'm just like, that right there, like that persistence, that attitude will take you into whatever you want to do in the rest of your life. And please keep doing that. However, I said no like 4 times and the answer is no.
Right. So there is like a very fine line, right? Because especially as a parent, right? Like you don't want them. So I have this whole, my entire mindset that I've developed, right? Which is basically what I talk about, is this thing called the 10% target. The 10% target is making 10 attempts at whatever you want most in life. Mm. And because the truth is, nobody makes 10 attempts. And
nobody makes one attempt.
And almost nobody makes one attempt. And there's a bunch of research I can back that up with. The people who actually make more than that one attempt are the ones who either get to that goal or another opportunity will present itself that they never even knew existed. Mm. So making those 10 attempts or being on the path to make those 10 attempts, very important. But to answer your question, this is what happens. I think that we're all born with a baseline of boldness, right? Like maybe I was born, maybe out of 10, 8 out of 10 boldness. You were born with like a 3 out of 10. Mm-hmm. But you can pump up that 3 to like a 6 or 7. Maybe I can pump it up to a 10. Mm-hmm. But we all can like take from our baseline and increase it. That's the first part. Now, I think what happens in life is that experience jades us. And the more we get jaded, the more we're told no, or the more rejection we have, it suppresses our feeling and our ability to want to go out and get something that we want, right? So that's what happens. A kid doesn't know not to touch a stove until he touches a stove and it's hot, and that's how he learns not to do it again. Mm-hmm. I lead with this idea that naivety is a strength. The less you know, the better, right? Ignorance is actually bliss, because that's what gives you that like audacity to go after something. Now, when I have 2 kids, and funnily enough, my little girl is very bold. She's like actually a little too sassy, because that's all she hears and talks about, right? I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah. I got to like wheel in that sassiness a little bit. She's 8 years old. Hey. And she's adorable, I'm not going to lie, she's very confident. And I, as a mom, rather my kid have a little bit more like sassiness than have the alternative, which is be too timid and be meek and scared to stand up for herself. Mm-hmm. Because I see that actually happening way more. I have more parents saying to me, you know, my kid doesn't have self-esteem. My kid doesn't feel good enough. Mm. They're comparing themselves all the time to someone at school, or now, of course, with social media, always comparing themselves to someone on social media.
Of course.
The bigger epidemic is getting kids to have a really healthy self-esteem, less of an epidemic having too much confidence in a real way. Mm. People can be, they can pretend and like have that bravado that they're confident, but really not. But what I'm talking about is true self-confidence. I actually partner, one of the partners I work with because of my message is a company called Legends. And it's like basically a platform where it helps kids, gives you these 5-minute tools and exercises to actually increase confidence in kids.
Okay.
Because it's such a problem. And they work with all the top educators. And basically 5 minutes a day, it gives these kids these tools to build resilience. Because I'm actually so, as you can tell by my body language and how I'm talking, I'm exceptionally passionate about this because it does start at a young age.
Yeah.
And if we could be taught as young kids that it's okay to have an opinion, it's okay to fall and fail, get rejected, as long as you get back up again. The effort is always more important than anything else. I don't care if you fail. I don't care if you whatever, but at least give it an honest try. My problem is people don't even want to give them, they count themselves out mm-hmm. before they even make that attempt. And like I said, with all the problems that are happening with social media and technology and the comparison game at a young age, that beats down at someone's confidence.
Yeah.
They think, well, I'm not as pretty as her. I'm not as smart as him. I'm not as athletic. I'm not as this. And all that is what's going on. These negative self-talks is all we talk about.
Yeah.
We need to like flip it on its head and reframe that and tell kids and be a role model for that and be like, you know what? Doesn't matter. There's always going to be someone who's prettier, faster, mm-hmm, smarter. Mm-hmm. But those things are not the secret sauce to being successful.
Yeah.
The actual secret sauce is being bold, learning how to be resilient, learning how to fail, become immune to that feeling of failure, and still get up and do it again. And to me, that is the most important life skill that you can teach a child.
And it's about the effort, not
the
result.
It's always about the effort.
Yeah. That's something that's tough, right? It's like when you watch your kid, whatever, shoot a bunch of shots on the basketball hoop or whatever.
Right,
and it's
right.
like, your instinct is one goes in and it's like, yeah, and you blow up this like, you know, disproportionate amount of excitement. But I think what happens is like you start reinforcing this idea that only the result is what matters.
Yeah.
And then that's when people get this subconscious desire to start cheating the process. And it's mm-hmm. like, it's not the result. It's not the fact that you made that shot. It's the fact that you practiced 50 shots. And like that effort will take you into becoming an excellent basketball player. Just doing that one thing, the effort of continuing to shoot, and not care whether you make it or you miss it, but just continue to get up the next day and go shoot a bunch more shots.
Exactly. You always praise the effort, not the result.
Yeah.
That's the first part. The other part, though, I think is really important is for kids to understand that there are winners and there's going to be losers. Not everybody wins everything all the time. And I think we are giving our kids a disservice by giving them participation trophies, by coddling them too much, and by doing things for them. Mm. I think kids definitely need to learn that feeling of failing, that feeling of not winning. You know, that is actually a part of life. Like what happens in a child's life is a microcosm for what happens in the bigger schema when they're older. Mm-hmm. And so to kind of try to feel like you're protecting those kids by not allowing them to feel that thing is, I think, doing them a disservice because then they grow up not knowing, you know, and feeling inadequate because they are failures. I did this, I got asked to speak at MIT, which of course is one of the best schools in the entire world, right? And they created this program called FAIL because funnily enough, their student body was failing at failure. They'd never, right?
That makes sense.
Right?
They were too good at being successful.
Yeah. No, they weren't too good at being, they had no experience with failing. So when they actually got lower grades or when they weren't doing well or when they were comparing themselves to the other kids who were getting 110 versus 100, right? They were beside themselves. Yeah. And because of that, the anxiety and depression skyrocketed. The suicide rate at that school was off the charts.
Wow.
And the emotional and mental health crisis that was occurring at these Ivy Leagues, because they were always told that they were the best.
Yeah.
And they were always being praised by the result and not about the effort. And then they only leaned into the things that they were good at.
Mm.
So what I suggest, not like I'm a parent expert, but I feel I'm a boldness expert. And yeah. I'm someone who got a master's degree in failing, but a PhD in getting right back up again, right? That I believe you have to try a lot of shit and get good at like falling and get good at being resourceful, realizing, you know what, I'm not really great at that. I'm going to try this and veer this way. And then like figure out how that is. And then if that doesn't work, then go somewhere else. But like that to me is like part of how you become like a fulfilled,
yeah.
happy human being.
Well-rounded human.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Where you actually have a chance of finding what fuels you in life.
Right.
Rather than just being set on this path of like, well, you know, I got good grades so I could get an MIT, so I could get this job to go do this thing. And it's like, did you want any of that?
Right. Or was that just kind of something that was brought upon you because you showed, because you got A pluses in math?
Right.
Right. Like to me, then whose dream are you really living?
Yeah.
Like I believe because I felt like a really average person, an average kid, that mediocrity was kind of like my strength. Hmm. And it worked for me, not against me. And, you know, I was going to say earlier, you see that like a lot of these A-plus kids, A-plus students end up working for C students.
Yeah.
Because, right? Because C students had to learn how to figure shit out because they weren't such great, you know, academics. Mm-hmm. While the academics were really great at academics, but they didn't really have to rely on anything else, or they didn't have to figure it out and be resourceful. It's like, if I was the most beautiful girl in school, I can just like rest on my laurels that like, okay, well, I don't have to like work on my personality or my intelligence or this or that, because I can always rely on that. And that creates a very empty, vapid person, mm-hmm. that also, once that starts to fade or change, or looks start to like, you know, times start to change and your look is not as popular as it used to, you become super like insecure.
Yeah. Well, and lost.
And lost.
Your sense of identity is completely gone.
There's no identity. That's the thing. You're relying on the wrong things. Those things are fleeting. So I don't know. I think it's like being mediocre, or because being average, I should say, is much more common. I think most people in the world are not people who like think that they're so below average, or people who think they're so above average.
Yeah.
I think most people just think that we're just like all, like most people, not all, are average and mediocre. And so what I always say to people is like, that to me is your greatest superpower. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to, like that to me is going to, that's a more of an indication that you're going to strive to greater lengths and like become way more successful than someone who was super dominant in just one core quality.
Yeah. Well, like you were saying earlier, the naivety sometimes is actually the strength.
It is.
Versus someone that's really intelligent that just, they want to analyze too much.
Overthink.
They need more data sets to make a decision, and that they never actually take the action or go do the thing. They're always so busy thinking about it.
Yeah, they overthink.
Take any action about it.
Well, I mean, I say all the time that like when you're too smart, you can think of all the possible negative things that can happen, and you have like analysis paralysis and overthink. But when you're too bold, you usually like aim or whatever, you shoot and then aim, and you think of all the, think of all the positive outcomes, and you're much more impulsive. Yes, maybe it doesn't work out all the time, but chances are it will work out some of the time.
Yeah.
Right. So I think by doing something is better than doing nothing.
Besides boldness, what are some other traits that will help you live the life that you want?
Well, I think that, boldness is the overriding message. What I do is I put principles in place.
Okay.
Like I have 16 principles that help people get to being bold. Number one, that's the first part. But I think a big one that I really, I maybe touch upon, but I think is something that is kind of before boldness is curiosity. Hmm. Curiosity to me is like exceptionally important. I think that curiosity opens up opportunity, communication, interest. Yeah. Like I always say, I'd rather be interested than interesting because you learn so much about what's out there that could actually, if someone was a real opportunist, to be honest with you, the best thing they can do is be curious because that's how they find opportunity. So if you're somebody who is someone who wants to be successful or is an entrepreneur or not really quite sure what direction to go, start leveling up your curiosity. If you, and again, it's like boldness. We're all born with a certain baseline. Like maybe I have a 6 in curiosity and you have a 2 in curiosity.
Sure.
But we can always bump that up because people, I think, underestimate the value and importance of how crucial that is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's a major cornerstone of my story for sure. Mm-hmm. Is just getting really curious. Once I really kind of figured out that I was wrong about a lot of things, I just got very curious about the journey to finding out, you know, what truth really was and what that really meant. And that's kind of one reason why I encourage a lot of people to start podcasts, even if they have no intention of becoming, you know, the next Joe Rogan or whatever. It's
right.
Just like fuel that curiosity in your mind. Like, what do you want to know about? You know, well, what am I going to start a podcast about? I don't know anything. Okay. I didn't either. Like, I just started asking questions, but also, if you can get better at asking questions, you can get better at being curious. You know what I mean? And you'll usually find that appetite is never satiated. It only gets bigger. You know what I mean? Like the more you indulge in curiosity, the more you find that you're curious about even more things or more people or more stories.
Well, I also think life is also about momentum, right? I mean, something in motion stays in motion. Mm-hmm. And when we are stagnant, nothing grows from stagnation, right? So the way to kind of keep momentum going is to be curious, is to like open up lines of communication and to also do things that you otherwise wouldn't do. So like I try to do something once every quarter, completely out of my comfort zone that I would never have wanted to do. Because then it shakes up my comfort zone, right? Yeah, it shakes things up. And I also prove to myself that I can do something that I otherwise don't like to do.
Yeah.
By the way, I should say, I hate public speaking. I hate it. And yet I do it and I get myself all worked up and I get very nervous about it, but I do it because I hate it. Yeah. And there's something called, by the way, exposure therapy. You know about this, right? Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. if you do that fear, that thing you hate just a little bit, every time it gets less and less of a fear.
Yeah.
So I say also like a great thing, like in like relation to being bold and curious is putting yourself in uncomfortable situations because it really helps with your growth and it helps with like really stepping yourself out of your place to get to the next place.
There's just so much value to being able to sit in uncomfortability, just to get, as trite as it sounds, to get really comfortable being uncomfortable.
But it is horrible.
In sales, in negotiations, like whoever taps first is the one who ends up being on the rough side of the, you know what I'm saying? Like
that's a good sales technique right there, right?
It is. Like there's so many times where there's just uncomfortable silence. But because like if you're a trained salesperson, you've been through that and you can just be like, and just look, you know what I mean? It's painfully uncomfortable. And there are so many people who can't make it through that 5 seconds, that 10 seconds. But if you can be one of those people, then you can really start to sharpen that skill set of just sitting in uncomfortability. And there's so many people that can't do it. And so what I always tell people is just like, if you can learn to do a bunch of things that not a lot of people can do, then you will never have to worry about a paycheck. You'll never have to worry about, you know, security or any of those things. It's just, you have the ability to do something that most people can't do. And so you get to have opportunities that most people don't get.
Do you know what most people can't do? And if someone can master this little skill, they will take themselves and they will 100x, 1000x, whatever they're trying to do.
What's that?
Follow through. Most people don't follow through. They cannot follow through. Follow through is the number one indicator of someone's self-confidence and self-esteem and someone's overall success.
Wow.
So if you're somebody who like doesn't think you're too much of any kind, like you're not that great, not that smart, not that this, not that talented, if you just followed through with the things that you started and saw them through, you are 88% more likely to succeed than the person beside you.
Wow.
Because a lot of people say they're going to do things, or say they're going to do things, don't. Start to do something, don't finish.
Yeah.
You know, think about something, but don't ever execute. No one executes.
Yeah.
People like ideate a lot, and they like to like do Zoom meetings, and they like to have, you know, vision boards.
Brainstorming sessions.
Yeah, brainstorming sessions and vision boards and these like manifestation thoughts.
Right.
And then the actual execution on anything. And I'm not just talking about like, you know, starting a business. I'm talking about, you know, starting a friendship. Someone you meet, you know, when you go to a party. We talk about Travis makes friends and how as we get older, we're not even making friends anymore because it gets harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
You know why that is? Because no one makes an effort. Nobody follows through. How many times have you heard, we should have coffee together. We should have lunch. Let's grab dinner. And how often does that happen?
Right.
Do you ever hear from that person
almost
ever again?
Almost never. Yeah, exactly.
Almost never. I would say pretty much never. And if you do, you're like, what the fuck? Who is this person? And you're shocked that that even happened. Right? So, why don't you be that person when they say that, you be the one who follows through.
Yeah.
The pleasant surprise probably from the other person, because think about it. If you're not making friends as an adult, probably they're not making friends as an adult, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that just opens up an entire new chain of network, even though we don't like that word.
Yeah.
Opportunity, friendship, and whatever else. So you just like increased your ability for something to happen tenfold.
Right.
Just by following through on the stupid shit that we say that we don't ever really mean.
And people don't realize too how detrimental it is for their own confidence, which is like such a core tenet of anybody's success is having self-confidence.
Yeah. But follow through with what you say you're going to do. And it's like the stupidest things. Like,
yeah, totally. Getting up early, not eating that thing or drinking more water or any of the things you tell yourself you're going to do.
Or like, I'll call you back I'll call you back tonight. People say, I'll call you back in 20 minutes and you never hear from them again. Or like, I'll get back to you about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what the answer is. Follow through and get back to that person. Like there's not one person who contacts me and, you know, I'm busy, I can't, whatever, but I will eventually get back to them because I don't feel good about myself when I don't.
Right?
Exactly. Not because of the other person, because I'm like, I don't want to be that person.
Well, you don't even trust yourself at that point. If you make all these commitments and say you're going to do stuff and you never do them, even if nobody else finds out, you know that you didn't do the thing that you said you were going to do. The stakes are higher than ever. It's not about what other people think. It's about what you think of you. If you don't think highly of yourself, how are you going to get other people to think highly of you?
100%.
You know, you're transmitting this subconscious like distrust in your own self to other people. And that's not good for any relationship.
No, it's not. Especially the relationship you have with yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's so many places I want to continue this conversation, Jen. Hopefully we get a second chance. I think maybe Las Vegas.
Yes.
Come through Vegas anytime.
I'm going now for the Super Bowl. Are you going to the Super Bowl?
I will not. I'll be in Atlanta the day of the Super Bowl. And I think I'm flying home that day, which is going to be interesting in the airport.
Oh, good for you.
Fly
fun times.
Into Vegas on Super Bowl Sunday for the first ever Super Bowl in Vegas. So
wow.
We'll see how busy the airport is. I have a theory that it won't be as busy because it's like I'm landing like an hour before the Super Bowl starts. So I think most people will be here.
You're fine.
We'll be there by that point. So
you'll be fine.
Cross my fingers. But I will be in Vegas though. So yeah,
wow.
Maybe we get some time for
definitely.
Part two.
We should definitely keep in touch. We'll have lunch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's follow through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll get some coffee.
Exactly. Let's see who's going to call who. Yeah, exactly.
Jen, thanks so much for coming to the show. I appreciate
you.
Where can people go to find a little bit more about you?
Oh, thank you. They can follow me on Instagram at TheRealJenCohen. They can go to my website, jennifercohen.com, and sign up for my free newsletter. They can, of course, get my book, Bigger, Better, Bolder, right here. And learn how to be bolder tomorrow and or today. Why wait? And I mean, that's it. And they can listen to my podcast, Habits and Hustle.
Habits and Hustle podcast, Bigger, Better, Bolder. the book. Again, you guys, I say this every single time we have an author on the show, but I mean it. Don't have a budget for books. Just buy books. If it's a book that you hear on the show, you know that I have done some vetting, and you know that the author's going to have some really, really great stuff to say. So don't think about it. Just go to Amazon right now, wherever you get your books. Barnes & Noble, I've seen Bigger, Better, Bolder at Barnes & Noble that is next to my house. Bigger, Better, Bolder. Go pick up a copy right now before you forget. Add it to your library. Add it to your reading list. And go follow Jen on social media. Tell her what's up. Tell her you heard about her here on the show. Jen, thanks so much for coming on. This is awesome.
Thank you so much.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet. Then leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.